Japanese organised crime clans known as the Yakuza have long been a source of fascination for many in the West. But if that includes you, you might also be a fan of Tokyo Vice, the hit TV series based on the book of the same title, written by journalist Jack Adelstein. Tokyo Vice covers Jake's time as a crime reporter in the early 90s at the biggest newspaper in Japan, Yomiuri Shimbun. The tattoos, the lopped-off fingers, the samurai swords, it's got it all.
What's it like to be a Yakuza?
I could write about that.
Yes, but then I'd have to kill you.
Jake Adelstein's latest book is called Tokyo Noir, and it covers his life post-journalism. But never fear, he's still in Japan and still having plenty of run-ins with the Yakuza. I spoke with Jake yesterday.
Well, thank you for having me.
And Jake, I've watched some of Tokyo Vice, the TV series. That was quite a life you were living there for a while, investigating the Yakuza. Why, how are you still even alive?
Because the Yakuza in Japan have a very public presence, and they're concerned about how they look to the world. And I've always been aware of internal politics in the Yakuza world. If you can find one person to be your friend and you have a common enemy, you can navigate it pretty well.
You were under police protection for years. You suffered death threats, you suffered bashings, and yet you're still, even in this current life, investigating the Yakuza. Why not leave well enough alone?
I am leaving well enough alone. I associate with only one or two people who are still in the organizations, and I am watching them fade out of Japanese history. I think the average Yakuza age is now 55. Their numbers are a fourth of what they were 10 years ago. They are on their way out, and I will wish them a farewell happily.
You nevertheless did have, just to sort of make people aware of this, you did have a bounty placed on your head back in 2008 by the leader of one of the most powerful clans then, Tadamasa Goto, but not anymore. How did you get free of that threat, that danger, Jake?
Gosh, I'm plugging my book here. A lot of that is described in Tokyo Noir, but essentially he had so many enemies and did so many things wrong that I found someone who really wanted him out of the picture completely and made a sort of deal, and that helped both of us.
You made a deal?
We made a deal.
Were you a journalist then?
I was a journalist then. The particulars of it was that there was a lawsuit by a family of someone who Goto Tadamasa's henchman had killed. I wrote it up in The Atlantic, and then I was asked by someone in the organization if I could write it out in Japanese and put it on my blog, and I did. And shortly afterwards, the lawsuit was settled, and Goto Tadamasa fled to Cambodia. So that made life lots easier for me.
For sure. That takes us to your, I'm going to come to Tokyo Noir in a moment because it deals with your life post-journalism. Did your exit from journalism, Jake, have anything to do with some of your methods of your journalistic investigating? You really went deep into the world. You lived amongst these police and these Yakuza in a pretty close way. You slept with sources. You bribed police. You got drunk with members of the Yakuza. Had you moved beyond the ethical bounds of journalism?
Well, you know, I wasn't taught that there were problems with that. I was taught that what you had to do was protect your sources and write the truth. And if you couldn't write the truth and protect your sources, then you either gave up on the article or you found a better source. So I never considered myself violating the ethical precepts of Japanese journalism. Probably I did of Japan. I think I left journalism because I just got tired of the grind. I took a break to work for the State Department. They were doing a study of human trafficking in Japan. I was allowed, because I'm not a journalist doing that job, to pay off criminals for information and write a report that was influential in making Japan put actual laws on the books to deal with human trafficking. And after that ended and sort of in the middle, I was asked by a investment bank if I would help them clear their books of their companies that were connected to the Yakuza. Mm-hmm. And so I did that for a long time. And I enjoyed that. You know, it's like being a journalist, except you're writing for three people instead of, 3 million people.
And that brings us to Tokyo Noir. I think what you're describing there is the work you've been doing, which is called due diligence. It seems to me it's a private eye by any other name. What exactly is the job of doing due diligence for companies?
Oh, it is. It is like being a private eye. Company comes to you in this case, you know, at a time when they realized if you are doing business with the Yakuza, that the financial services agency in Japan will take away your banking license. And they said, you know, we want you to look at company A, B, C and tell us if there's something we should be concerned about. And so I did that for a long time. And it was very interesting because we all are fascinated by the Yakuza in their tattoos and their missing fingers. Mm. But the white collar side is very clever and they are very good at making companies that are successful because they can use methods of succeeding in business that other people can't, which include blackmail and extortion and finding good talent, which they're willing to invest in.
Yeah, and as you document in the story, I mean, and as you just referred to there, the Yakuza these days hide in plain sight behind legitimate front companies, much like the 'Ndrangheta does in Italy, the mafia in Italy, using front companies for money laundering and using some of those methods you just talked about there. But also, does it exploit and control whole legal sectors where there's easy profits to be made? Is that part of how it works today?
Yeah. I mean, the smart guys have gone into more legitimate businesses. The people who are running your sort of basic shakedown and protection racket groups are fading out. You know, at one time, a Yakuza organization, the Kodokai, took over what was the equivalent of classmates.com. I don't know if you have that in Australia, but it's like a high score union site. And I thought that was a brilliant move. Here you have all these people exchanging messages to each other about their high school reunion. We all know what happens at high school reunions. And, you know, that's a treasure trove of material to blackmail people on. So when they took it over, it was called Yubitomare. I was like, you know, you guys are smart. I'll give them credit for that.
Your new job in due diligence, the job you took up after you finished with journalism in the State Department, Private Eye, has you investigating just like the old days. Tell us, you say you keep away from the Yakuza now largely, but nevertheless, you unearthed something called the nuclear mafia. Tell us about the nuclear mafia, as you discovered when you were doing due diligence on TEPCO, the Tokyo Electric Power Company, which of course owned the Fukushima nuclear plant that caused the 2011 nuclear disaster.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Japan is dumping their nuclear waste from that accident into the ocean even as we speak. So we all get to suffer from their incompetence and corruption. The Yakuza have always been an integral part of Japan's nuclear industry. As a matter of fact, even today, they don't do background checks on workers because if they eliminate the Yakuza, they can't have enough people to clean up the site, to run the plants that are back in operation or maintain the ones that are in stasis. When working on this story about TEPCO and Fukushima, I discovered that there was a Yakuza connected to the Yamaguchi-gumi who had been blackmailing TEPCO not to discuss problems they had with cracks in the reactors. That's a pretty frightening thing to discover that, you know, not only are the Yakuza working at these nuclear power plants, but they're able to blackmail Tokyo Electric Power Company to keep things quiet. And I think that collusion between dark antisocial forces and one of Japan's biggest companies, one of its biggest advertiser, was a frightening thing.
Has that relationship been revealed in the inquiries that have followed the nuclear disaster?
When I first started writing about the fact that Yakuza were working in nuclear power plants and they were supplying labor, everyone said I was a crank, but then the cops started making arrests. Then the TEPCO had to come out and said, we will no longer work with organized crime in our facilities. So I was definitely proven right. The connections are still there. It's just that nobody's interested in severing them.
Another case you talk about in Tokyo Noir is when you were doing work, due diligence, on a pachinko parlor operator. Now, pachinko, as I understand it, which is barely at all, is a bit of a cross between, you know, what we call the pokies here and an arcade game. It's some kind of electronic gaming. And you were asked to look for any connections to North Korea. What did you find?
I found that, yes, you know, there has always been a connection between North Korea and the pachinko associations. That's because many of the people who were brought over to Japan as slave labor during World War II stayed. And then as Korea was split into North and South Korea, they had to declare alliances. Mm-hmm. So North Koreans in Japan, who still have relatives there that are alive, are essentially blackmailed by the North Koreans Association in Japan. And if they're running pachinko parlor, which is a very popular occupation for Koreans in Japan, then they're often sending money back to the homeland. Now, as the number of returnees from Japan who are in North Korea die off, those connections are getting much thinner. But, you know, pachinko in Japan is a huge source of revenue for North Korea, and it has been for many years.
Okay, but it doesn't have connection to the Yakuza.
Well, the connection to the Yakuza is that about a third of all the Yakuza are Koreans. And that's because in any society where you have people who are discriminated against, they go into organized crime. I mean, there was a time when there was a Jewish mafia because, you know, Jews couldn't get regular jobs, but the mafia was welcoming. And it's the same in Japan. A lot of the North Korean Japanese are in the Yakuza. So there's a connection. And, you know, the Yakuza are also good at ferreting money from one place to another. So there's a very weird nexus of ties between Yakuza, North Korea, pachinko.
Jake, you mentioned it earlier, the decline in the numbers. I wonder if that's perhaps another reason you're still alive to tell the tale and write the TV scripts, because the decline has been massive, hasn't it? 80,000 at their peak, I think, in the 60s to around, where are we at now?
About 20,000.
And this is largely due to the changes in those regulations. Is the Yakuza a spent force?
The Yakuza have no upside. No one is joining them. The average age of a Yakuza is my age now, 55. My friend who's still in the organization, you know, is contemplating, how do I retire? Am I going to have a retirement plan? You know, and that's the same thing that all these guys are asking themselves. Like, well, what do I do if I leave? It is so onerous to be a member of the Yakuza now and to be identified as one. You can't get a car. You can't rent an apartment. You can't even check into a hotel, that people are leaving. And the Japanese government was very gradual in how they've done it, but they've really put them in a place where nobody wants to join the Yakuza, and most people would leave if they could.
I did some stories on the Italian mafia a while back, the 'Ndrangheta, and what I learned there from some who had been members was that young people aren't joining because they basically don't want to take the risk. They don't want to end up in a prison cell for 10 years or more. It's just not, you know, they want a simpler life than that. Is being a member of the Yakuza illegal? If you're found to be one, do you end up in prison? Is that part of the dynamic that's going on here with young people not signing up?
No, you know, actually, this is a really interesting thing. Every year, for many years, the Lawyers Association of Japan would do a protest around the Yamaguchi-gumi headquarters demanding that Yakuza groups be outlawed, you know, that it becomes illegal to have them, it becomes illegal to join them. And that's never happened. But what is also interesting about that is there used to be, until 2018, monthly Yakuza fanzines with interviews with the top leaders and comic books, and the
pictures,
Yakuza fanzines would always write them. What?
Pictures, their photos and everything?
Yeah. I mean, I've got a whole, you know, I've got 20 years of them. Photos, interviews, poetry, analysis of the latest crimes, who's gone to jail, who's rising up. Each issue has a photo shoot of the latest regular meeting at the Yamaguchi-gumi headquarters. You know, because they have a regular meeting, the reporters outside taking photos, people going in and out, and hobnobbing afterwards. Those, you know, it was only until 2018 that they basically pushed those out of existence.
Has the decline in the Yakuza have anything to do with the, you know, does it correlate at all to the decline in the Japanese economy? Because, you know, there's been a downturn in Japan for some time. Has that impacted them?
Sure. I mean, if you are barely getting by, you don't want to pay extortion money to the Yakuza. You don't want to pay protection money. And the Yakuza are parasites. If the host is ill, the parasites don't flourish either. So that definitely has to do a lot with Japan's declining economy, wage stagnation, and people not having the luxury of paying Yakuza for poor services. That has definitely been a part of it.
Jake, I have to say, after reading your books, having a look at the TV series, some of your stories are so wild. You do wonder, and I know people have questioned whether you've embellished or made things up. Have you?
Oh, there's been one reporter who did a terrible job, and his articles are corrected 6 times, if you want to take a look at it. So no, I haven't embellished and I haven't made things up. I've posted most of my source materials online so people could actually read them for themselves if they would bother to.
What a life. Jake Adelstein, thank you so much for joining me on Saturday Extra.
Thank you.
That's Jake Adelstein, and his new book, Tokyo Noir, will be out soon. And he's also going to be a guest here in Australia at the Sydney Writers' Festival and the Brisbane Writers' Festival towards the end of the month. That's it from us on Saturday Extra this week. Thanks to the team, Linda Lopresti, Isabel Summerson, Neve Dunn and Amri de Bettencourt. Thank you for your company. I hope you're gearing up for a wonderful weekend, a beautiful Saturday. Whether it's rainy or sunny, enjoy it. It's 8:30 now, time for Global Roaming with Geraldine Doogue and Hamish McDonald.